All right, guys, welcome back, EYL, ATL edition. You know, this is our second home, man. We love Atlanta. So this is going to be a legendary episode because this is always kind of my favorite episodes. I like to get the backdrop stories of music and entertainment, stuff like that. We grew up
especially the guys we grew up on.
Yeah, so everybody knows, like, you know, Chris Gotti and all of these episodes that we do
Dame.
With people. Dame, oh yeah, shout out to Dame. Kenny Burns. Yeah, these are all like my favorite episodes because I like to learn from the OG. So this is right in line with that. We got the privilege of speaking to Jason Jeter, better known as Jay Jeter. For me, I was a huge T.I. fan
that's
growing up. So that's the first time I heard your name. He used to always say your name like Jay Jeter, Jay Jeter. Then I used to read like Source magazines and stuff like that. And they was like, yeah, Jason Jeter, the business partner. And he's like, you know, the business behind Grand Hustle, T.I.'s record label. So I'm like, all right. So that's who I knew who you are. And then it was crazy that, you know, how life happens. And now we get to do an interview with you. Yeah. But yeah, so Jason is, he wears many hats. So he had a record, he still has a record label. He was responsible for a lot of the major artists in this last decade.
That's a
two
fact.
Decades, actually.
I think unknowingly. People don't really know the game like
B.O.B., Killer Mike, Travis Scott, Iggy Azalea, of course, T.I.
Trader Truth.
Young Dro. To name a few.
Just a couple.
To name a few.
I say I definitely got to work with a lot of great people. You know what I'm saying? Like, one way or another, we got to work together, you know, and super dope experiences for sure.
Yeah, you were the man of mystery for a while. Like I told you, like, we always heard your name, but we never saw you. And I think, like I said, like, big things popping when you was in the beginning. I'm like, that's got to be him.
Yeah,
that's got to be him in the beginning.
And he's actually the owner of Heavy Sounds Labs, which is a whole revolutionary approach to the music industry. We're going to talk about that as well. So we got a long conversation. So first and foremost, thank you for joining us. Appreciate it.
Nah, thank you for having me. Of course, I'm a fan of the show. Watch the show, and you know it's dope to be here.
I appreciate it. So let's get right into it as far as the music. So you found T.I. I heard the story. I read the story about that. So T.I., one of the greatest rappers of all time.
Sure.
Definitely one of the best to ever come out of the South. Revolutionized trap music.
Yeah.
It's interesting because that's like a whole genre of music. Even though I don't know if his sound is really trap music, like what it is today.
Yeah.
That's a different story. But
the sound has changed.
But
you evolve, you grow.
Yeah. But so I say that to say you found him. So how did you find T.I.? What's that story?
I moved to Atlanta in like 97, and I started working at Patchwork Recording Studio. And Patchwork was young hip-hop studio, like, you know, so for me coming to the city, and I'm seeing, it's like you said, you reading credits, I'm reading credits, I was that same person, you know, so I'm seeing like Patchwork on the back of Outkast albums and just the different more hip-hop albums that's coming out of Atlanta. So I ended up going to the studio, getting a job, getting an internship, the whole nine. They had a record label upstairs, which was an independent label. They had artists like Raz Kaz, Mean Green, rest in peace. Mean Green just died. And a guy named Mr. Voodoo. And then downstairs, they had the recording studio, you know? So for me, I interned upstairs. I worked records at college radio, you know? And then downstairs, I would work overnight. I'm like the nighttime studio manager, right? So that means I'm doing everything. I'm opening the door, you know, taking out the trash, just whatever the artists need. They need some weed, whatever, I'm figuring it out. Right? I'm doing everything, you know? And you know, like I always say, like that position, you know, I put myself right in the middle of traffic, you know? So everybody in Atlanta, if you was a producer, if you was a manager, artist, A&R, a future something because you're in the entourage, you know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. I put myself at the perfect place because I got to meet everybody opening the door and, you know, and now, of course, getting the opportunity to really start knowing people, you know? So I'm fresh out of New Jersey, New York, so I'm down here and I had already interned at Arista Records in New York. I had already sold mixtapes in high school. I had already, like, had a lot of experiences, like, up into this time, you know? So when I'm here now, I'm very strategic and I know what I'm kind of trying to put together, you know? And I end up meeting DJ Toon. DJ Toon, super dope producer.
Yeah.
At the time, during this time in Atlanta, Noontime was like everything. Like, anybody know about Atlanta, you know about production, producers, like, Noontime was like, that shit was like the mob. Like, if you was a producer and you wasn't a part of Noontime, you really wasn't eating. You know what I'm saying? Like,
that was a crew of producers.
That was a company by three young entrepreneurs, Noonie, Henry Lee, Chris Hicks, and Ryan Glover, you know?
Okay.
And, like, for real, like, y'all need to get with them. If anybody don't know them, you need to, like, know the history of, like, Noontime, because that shit was the blueprint for a lot of people who came behind it.
Organized Noises after that?
Organized Noises during the same time. See, Noontime's downside, or why a lot of people don't know them, is because they didn't really have an artist that really blew.
Okay.
But, like, now on the business side, like, when it came to, like, writers and producers, they had, like, Jazzy Faye, Dent, Brian Michael Cox, wow, like, Jonte Austin, J-Dub. They had, like, a lot of dudes that were, like, on every album, like, from R&B to, like, rap during this era of music, you know? And they had their own publishing company. So, like, for real, like, shout out to them. They inspired a lot of people, you know? But during this time, you had Noontime in Atlanta. You had Noontime. You had Organized Noize, who, of course, were doing their thing.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, you had Jermaine Dupri, So Def. And it was kind of like you had clicks, you know? So I really kind of said to Toomp, like, yo, Toomp, you dope, but you by yourself, you know? So, like, why don't we find an artist together so that you can really display your music properly on, you know? And that's what led us to going out and trying to find an artist, you know? And then not too late after that, we find Tip, you know? Coincidentally, DJ Toomp grew up with a guy named Tramell Morgan, rest in peace, who was Tip's older cousin, you know? So that's how he kind of found him and literally brings me to music. He like, yo, what you think? I'm like, yo, this kid is dope. He had a few records that was recorded, you know? And, you know, from there, we was like, yo, let's meet him and let's work.
So you meet him there, right? And then is that the point where you're like, all right, we're going to take this kid, you create Grand Hustle Management, or are we just trying to get him signed to a label?
Yeah, so we meet, we hit it off, we do a demo tape immediately, go in the studio, do four records, Tip and Toomp, and get a deal, you know? Get a deal, get him signed to Ghetto Vision, LaFace Records. And at that point, yes, that's when Grand Hustle Management started as my management company.
Okay.
And then he was signed to Ghetto Vision / LaFace Records for the first project, I'm Serious.
It just made me think of the line when he's like, yo, man, if LA could just see how wrong he would be. I told you nobody's stronger than me. I told you so.
So all right, so you did the first album, which commercially wasn't really that successful.
Sure.
That's the I'm Serious project, right?
Yeah.
So then how do you do that joint venture with, was it Atlantic? Atlantic. How did that come about? Because at the time, they said it was like kind of a revolutionary situation, right?
Yeah.
Kind of like explain that a little bit?
Yeah, so we did the first album, I'm Serious, and like you said, LA, like, they didn't see it because, you know, it wasn't social media and shit then.
Yeah, so, I remember Beanie Man was on the track.
Yeah. but for real, like, the first album, if you from the Southeast region, like, the first album is like a classic. You know what I'm saying? So that gave us the ability to do shows like crazy throughout the South, you know? So for us, we just burning through the South, you know, which LA, they couldn't really see it, but clearly we doing shows, so we know what's happening.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
Yep.
And really he wanted us to do another album, whereas we were like, nah, let's go deeper, let's shoot some more videos of this album, you know? And our thing was, if you don't help us work this album right, when we see the traction, why should we do it again, you know? And we really didn't agree, so he agreed to let us go, you know? So now at that point, you know, for real, it was like the best thing that could have happened, you know?
Yeah.
Like at this point, like, we already moving throughout the South, so I'm already, when we go to a market, we hitting the mom and pop record stores, which still existed back then, you know what I'm saying? Like, we doing the show, like, we getting the contacts at the radio station, the whole nine. So at this point, I got all my information. So now, back home, 50 Cent's doing mixtapes. You know what I'm saying? So I'm like, okay, like, let's just take some of this music. Some people heard, some people didn't hear. you know, and let's start creating our mixtape series, you know. So we started doing that. We created this brand called In the Streets, you know. And we did
DJ Drama.
No, that wasn't DJ Drama. We started literally T.I. and the PSC in the streets. And
it was Tip. Oh, PSC.
And they did the first mixtape, and that mixtape was crazy, you know. So that mixtape was like, we selling them, we shipping them, mom and pop stores, of course, people bootlegging them. Everybody in the streets, like it was on fire, you know. But during this time, I found DJ Drama had a flyer in a barbershop. Like, he had like his artwork to his flyer in the barbershop. So I'm starting to see like these DJ Drama flyers like in obscure places. So you gotta think, Gangsta Grillz hadn't even done nothing with no artists before.
Yeah.
Like, so I hit DJ Drama because I already know like our mixtapes is going so crazy, but we're not really in the mixtape business for real, right? We're just doing this shit as a means to get some traction, and you know. But you know, I was like, I thought it made sense too, because once again, I'm looking at what came before me with Clue and with Rockefeller and all of that. So I'm like, yo, we need a DJ. So I hit Drama up. We get with Drama. We started kind of like building with Drama, but we didn't do a mixtape with Drama, I think, until like maybe after our first two mixtapes. And then we did a mixtape combined with Drama, you know. But long story short, those mixtapes is what got us traction. You know what I'm saying? Those mixtapes, you know, so you know how it goes, supply and demand, you know? So like, they got the demand right, and then record labels start doubling back and calling, you know, and we end up doing it with Atlantic, but we had like everybody, except for like Jimmy Iovine, everybody else.
just based off of like the buzz that you was building in the street.
Yeah, exactly.
So Atlantic, it was a 50-50 joint?
Yeah, that was a 50-50, yeah.
So what is 50-50, like what is, because I hear that a lot, but like what does that actually mean? Like you just split revenue 50, are you responsible 50% of promotion, like, or is it just 50% of the revenue goes to you?
So a record company is always paying the money. Like, you're not really coming to the table paying money. But, you know, like, 50-50 is a net profit split. So after we, you know, the expenses, now these profits, we split 50-50 down the middle.
Is that the standard, like, that, like, record labels would have, like, a rough ride or something? Like, is that, like, 50-50?
Yeah. For most artists, that's the standard. And then you have, of course, people who will say, I got a distribution deal. So, you know, that's even going deeper, right? So now it depends on what your split is, even with a distribution deal. So verbiage can be interesting, because you can have a 50-50 deal and you can still have a reversion, whereas now at a certain point, after a certain amount of years, the masters revert back to you, versus somebody can say, I got a deal on my masters. I got a deal, I got a reversion. I'm on my masters in 5 years.
Did you guys have your masters?
Yeah, we got a version. Yeah, we reverted back.
Version,
yeah.
How does that work?
So basically, after 10 years of, if you do a deal with, say, whatever, Sony, Universal, whoever, and you say after 10 years, the masters revert back.
Come back.
For the entire catalog?
The entire catalog, absolutely.
So at that point, when y'all get to Atlantic, this is the first time y'all put out trap music? Is that the first album that comes out?
Atlantic.
And then, does that create, because in my mind, I'm trying to paint this picture clearly, so we drop... Well, you guys drop trap music, and then Grand Hustle Records comes from success of that.
No. We walked in the door with Grand Hustle Records.
Okay.
Trap music. So after Sirius was over, we hit the streets. We did the mixtapes, Volume 1, Volume 2. This, you got to think, we had during this time, we got Puff on our mixtapes, we got Foxy Brown on our mixtapes, we got the record Never Scared came from our mixtape. You know what I'm saying? So like, we got records that's like big. It's coming, big records that's coming from our mixtapes.
We heard them in New York.
So you know, at that point, you know, supply and demand. So you know, at that point, it's like, why would we just do an artist deal?
I'm interested to know the backstory on this. We gotta get T.I. on the show too, but
yeah, sure.
It was because I think I was in college. I was in Baltimore in college, and up until that point, I honestly never listened to any Southern music. I was like really, really New York. Like, I grew up on Mobb Deep, Raekwon, Nas, stuff like that. So I was really, but T.I. was the first person that I saw from the South that reminded me of somebody from New York. Yeah. Like, his style, like, you know what I mean? Like, he looked like some, like, he didn't have gold teeth in his mouth. He had a fade. Like, you know what I'm saying? I'm interested. I mean, you're from New York. So did you have some influence in, like, or was he just like a different person? Like,
I mean, you know, it's interesting because when I met him, that's how he was. You know what I'm saying? And that's what to me, that's definitely what was like, okay, like during this time, Outkast is like everything in Atlanta.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? So it's like everybody got dreads, they got gold teeth. It's like Goody Mob, Outkast. Everybody has that influence. Think about the Young Bloods, Jim Crow, like all of those artists. Like that's how it was for real, you know? So for me, seeing them and seeing that, right? Like, yo, damn, he polo shirt, fade, no tags, like gold teeth. I'm like, this is something interesting, right? Yeah, you know, like, but when you look at it, the craziest thing is this, right? Tip's dad lived in Harlem.
Yeah. Oh, okay. So, there like, it is.
Tip used to go to New York during the summer times, just the same way if you was from up top, you might go down south for the summer. Yeah. He used to go to New York for the summer. You know what I'm saying? So that's something that kind of, you know, you always got to think about that. Bro,
now swagger like us makes more sense.
So all right, so y'all blowed off the door with trap music. That's, like I said, that changed the game. And then right off the gate, like y'all start with the label. Like, so how did that, all right, so it's one thing to have a superstar artist.
Sure.
But I'm assuming it's not as easy to like grow it and have other artists come in. Like, how'd that work?
I mean, you know, it's like you said, it's challenging. You know, it's definitely challenging because even when you're doing a partnership with a Atlantic, Def Jam, whoever it is, getting a deal you getting this joint venture deal on the strength of this one right here. You know what I'm saying? Like, so to truly get them to look around that at any point is hard as hell. You know what I'm saying? You look like it's super challenging, you know? But I think for us, I think we did a decent job for real. You know, when you think about like we really went in a lot of different directions. You know, we did the Hustle and Flow soundtrack.
Yep.
We did that. That was dope. That was a great experience working with John Singleton.
Rest in peace.
Obviously, you know, the movie like won an Academy Award, you know what I'm saying? With the record.
3-6 Mafia,
Three
right?
3-6 Mafia, absolutely. You know, so
it's hard out here.
Yeah. So it's tough, man, because even for artists too. Like a lot of times artists like they wanna me and my man Clay, shout out Clay, man. We always had a saying like, yo, artists, it's hard for artists to get off the yacht and get back on their tugboat. You know what I'm saying? Like, so, you know, you think if you're an artist signed to another artist, it's easy to, you know, ride his wave, and be on his rider and be at the hotels and all that shit with his reality. But when you think about your reality, like, you know what I'm saying? I got to get out here and really grind from the bottom up, you know? So that part, a lot of artists too, you know, they kind of mentally, you know, like.
Yeah. Do you think that's an interesting point that you bring up? Because you see like G-Unit and it was like Lloyd Banks to me, one of the greatest lyricists, but they never, once 50 decided that he was cool off of them, they never did anything, right? And it's like, for the most crews, that's usually the case, right?
Yeah.
Every now and then you have somebody like a Jim Jones who like started as a hype man and now became actually probably the biggest member in the group.
Yeah.
But for the most part, it's like you have a lead rapper, he has his crew, they're like, you know, the Saint Lunatics. no disrespect, but then it's like when he leaves, so it's like, it's kind of like a gift and a curse. Nah, this guy's crazy. Nah, shout out to Murphy Lee. And, shout out to the whole unit, man.
Shout out to my man Trike. Shout out to Dirty.
Do you think it's like a gift and a curse in a way, right?
Yeah, absolutely. It's a gift and a curse for sure, man. Because, too, let's be honest, like, a lot of times the rapper is the CEO of the company, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, and no matter what, no matter how business, great you are at business, you are still an artist, you know? So you are still, you know, it's going to be different. You know, things, treatment, attention, all of that. You know, like, you're an artist. You're going to go for opportunities for yourself. Like, so I think that it's super challenging. It's a lot of dynamics that come into it. You know, that's why typically I think when you see it work, you really have the artist and the business person, you know, myself and Tip or Dame and Jay or, you know what I'm saying? It's usually like you got to have some balance because you got to have somebody that's kind of still fighting for like the underdog and the new and having that hunger for the business too. You know what I'm saying? Like you think, like I was a fan of hip hop before I met Tip. You know what I'm saying? Like I saw Crush Groove, I knew what I wanted to do.
So to me
it's like I got the same hunger as him when we click up because like, yo, I want to do this and you want to do this. Damn, we can do this together. Boom. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. Like, so I think that that's truly like the best combination that you could possibly have in it.
Yeah, I think that that what you're saying, like, as you were saying, I'm like, yo, you guys are the perfect match, right? Because this guy is an artist. He's also the co-owner of the label, but like, you got the business. Like, yeah. You're going to take care of the business. Nobody, you don't, they don't see you, but you're making all the moves.
Sure.
Right? So like, is it your vision to expand it outside the music and just let Tip focus on the music? So as like we get into films, we get into clothing, right? Because ATL was a situation that in the King album, yeah, like it was perfect timing.
Perfect time.
King perfect album. King
album. You want to talk about perfect timing? Like perfect time, at that point, it was like, yo, this guy is not the King of the South.
What
like,
you, what you know about that?
This is like the biggest guy in rap music now.
Yeah, that was perfect time.
That was big.
Yo, it's funny, man. I mean, like, I couldn't really tell you how it started, but the hunger was matched. You know what I mean? Like, as far as like, yo, you got the opportunity to do this and that and this and that. Like, just being that the blueprints was already laid before us. So we students of the game, right?
Right,
so
right,
of
right.
course, like, we're into fashion, so naturally, all right, like, yeah, we're going to go to fashion at the right time.
Right.
You know?
So you just watched the cruise before?
You just watched the cruise before, right? So same thing with film. What happened on the film side is crazy because somebody had reached out to me, like a casting agency. They had hit me about Tip auditioning for Barbershop, you know? So he, and we wasn't prepared. Like, they saw, like, this was like, they saw an interview on him in the magazine and was like, yo, we want him to audition. So now we like, what does that mean? Oh, send a tape. Like, what? Like, so yo, like, we went, if Tip sees this, he gonna buck out too. Yo, we went and my man had a barbershop. We in a barbershop, like, we filming. We filming him doing the part and shit. Like, so we sent the tape, and obviously he didn't get the part, you know, but that was like, it was like, yo, we gonna do things that you're supposed to do to get big. That was really the thought process more than anything. Like, anything that's like authentic and natural and you ain't really looking crazy and compromising yourself, like, why not?
So let me ask you this, because I want to talk about the label. Mm-hmm. Shout out to Young Dro. That's one of my favorite songs of
Shoulder
all
lean.
Time. Shoulder Lean.
Remember that was our cookout big closeout.
Right. That was big tune. That was big
Shout
tune.
Out to Dro, absolutely.
So you guys, it seems like you had a lot of artists. Like, I don't know if it was official situations or... So, B.O.B. How did, like, because people don't, B.O.B.
Two number one singles.
That's a hell of a run.
Back to back.
B.O.B. has a lot of, like, 6 million sold.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah. People, the Bruno Mars joint.
The Bruno
Mars
joint. You
totally understand. Bob has, like, a lot of records sold.
Super talented.
A lot of records sold, man, for real. Shout out to Bob.
So, was he on the, was TJ. He's on the label? He was on the label?
Yeah, he was on the label. Yep.
So, all right. How did, so, at this point, it's like, I guess the first group of people is T.I.'s friends or people from his neighborhood.
Yeah,
right?
Absolutely.
Like PSC.
PSC was first.
Young Dro from his neighborhood. Absolutely. Right? But now you actually, all right, now you actually start to have to, like, are you like an A&R at that? Like, are you actually finding talent? Like,
I mean,
how'd you find Bob? Like, how did that come about?
So I'll say this, right? I was definitely A&R. I A&R'd all of those albums in the beginning, you know? But more than just that, I believed in building, like, a real company and a real team. You know, so as soon as we went and we got a deal with Atlantic Records to do a joint venture deal, we got overhead budget. So now I was able to say, okay, cool, now it's some people that we've, I just hit the table. So I was like, so now it's some people that I've been rocking with, that I respect and I like the way that they hustling. I've already identified these people. Like, yo, when I get right, I'm gonna go back and I'm gonna get my man Clay Evans. You know, because Clay, that's my guy. We met each other at Patchwork. Like, he was promoting parties, you know what I'm saying? Like, and he just, he knew how to move around. You know, I'm new into the town. Like, this is somebody I met him early, you know? And then it was another person, Hannah Kane, you know? This is a young lady, my homegirl. We met her in school, and not in school, in Lenox Mall, rather. We met in Lenox Mall. And she started managing the Shark Bar. Shark Bar used to be on fire down here on Friday nights.
Oh, remember Shark Bar?
Like, yeah. Shark Bar used to be crazy. So, and it, like, I'm seeing like the parties and shit like that she doing. So, like, I'm like, okay, I'm gonna go get her. Like, these two people, I really don't know, but so many people in Atlanta, right? You know what I'm saying? Like, but these two people that I met, that I'm building with, that I like the way that they move, you know? So we did a deal, and I went and I did that. Tip, he had, of course, his friends that came with him. Doug Peterson, shout out to Doug. Doug was one that was also like, all right, cool, I want to be on the business side. He wasn't trying to rap, you know? So for real, like, that was like our executive team, so to say, you know? Clay created this off of the movie, created this open mic called Hustle and Flow on Bankhead at Club Crucial, and that's how we found Bob. He used to come to the performance at the
open mic. So when you first heard B.O.B., Bob, B.O.B., what is it? Which one is it? Is it Bob or B.O.B.?
I mean, it just depends. Depends on both. Like, Bob, I mean, if you see him, you're not going to say, what's up, B.O.B.? You know what I'm saying?
My close friends call me Bob. So
I kind of feel like he was ahead of his time.
Definitely.
Because now even, I feel like Young Thug is, you know, kind of, it's like, it's a whole genre of rap that's like a mix between rock and roll and punk rock. Yo, and you don't really know where to categorize
Bob, it. Bob was so ahead of his time that it kind of hurt him for real.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Like being that he was just, he was like an outcast, no pun intended. You know what I'm saying? But he was just like, he was just out there, like during that era, like, and for him, like he wanted to get love from his community, right? Yeah. Like, I'm from Atlanta, I go to Magic City, like nobody's checking for me. You know what I'm saying? Like, I just left doing a tour in Asia though, in China. Like, so you know, this is Bob's energy, which kind of truly, like, encouraged him and motivated him to make records that resonated, like, in those places.
Yeah. He was, like, up and coming. Like, I remember him being on the cover of XXL's Freshman. And I'm like, yo, all right, this dude can rap. But then it was like they were playing him on Z100. And it was like,
Bob came out.
You know what I'm saying? Like, he had Bruno on his first joint. The Airplanes record was out of this
Bruno
world.
Bruno on his first joint. That's,
yeah, Bruno Mars on your first record.
Like, that's big.
Your first record's double platinum.
And he's,
bro,
at that time, Bruno, like,
Bruno's first record.
That's his first record. That's what I'm saying. Like, Bob is the bigger artist on that on that song. And it's like, all right, well, who's that kid that's singing on the hook type thing?
Yep, exactly.
That's crazy, exactly, man.
So, but how is it? All right. So you're running a record label. You have T.I. who's like, if this was the Lakers, he'd be LeBron James, right?
Sure.
But then you got a bunch of other artists that's coming in the fall here with his crew, PSC. Then you got Young Dro, who's a budding star in the streets.
Yeah.
And you got Bob, who's alternative kind of, you know, rap.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's a little different situation. And the record label's growing. So, like, as a coach of an NBA team, you got to manage egos. And it's like, this one person thinks he's not getting enough attention and stuff like that. Is it like that for a record label?
Absolutely. These are artists. You know what I'm saying? These are rappers. You know what I mean? Like, these are rappers, right? So you put them in the room, you know how that go? Like, they want it. You know, they want it. But true indeed, it's about who really wants it the most, who really puts in the most work, who really goes out of their way, you know, to consistently put in that work for real. That truly kind of shows. You know, you see the difference between the ones that really go and the ones that don't go. You know, of course, a lot of times it's talent, but most of the time it's work ethic. Working, you're gonna get better, you know. So, yeah. I mean, obviously Bob, like you said, he was the first one to kind of come in from the mix. But you know, we did DJ Drama's first album,
mm-hmm.
I think first two albums maybe. You know, we signed April MJG. We did
albums
with them. Who else we had? We had of course we went to the Iggy Azalea era.
I was just there. That, like, in my mind, I'm like, yo, y'all really followed the crews. Like, now I hear the New York presence. It's like, yo. The Firm had Foxy, right? They got a female presence. Big had Lil Kim. And, like, y'all went the female route.
Let me ask you.
But y'all went a different route.
Iggy's interesting, though.
We went a different route before that, even, too, actually. Because we had a girl group called Ecstasy. Shout out to Jennifer and Bola, man. We had two girls. And it's so funny because, like, when I listen to, like, the City Girls and all that stuff now, I'm like, man, these girls was ahead of their time. Because that was, like, that was them. You know what I'm saying? Back then.
Why do you think Iggy Azalea never really, because she is talented and she's like a model and she has a huge following on social media, but it just seems like she's just not a big musical artist, but she has the potential. It would seem like she has the potential to be a musical artist.
I mean, sometimes people got to understand, I think, how to play their position, you know? Cause like you said, like you mentioned what, Lil Kim, Foxy Brown, like all those people, like, they didn't come out. They wasn't writing any rhymes and stuff, right? They was a part of a team, and they was a part of a movement, and they played a position and was able to really run through the holes. You know what I'm saying? Like, and I mean, when you get carried away and think, oh, I'm, you know, like, and people start working for you and just be like, all right, cool, and
Ego.
You didn't really do it all by yourself. So, you know, how do you think you're going to maintain it by yourself? You know?
Yeah.
That's what happens in a lot of those situations.
I was surprised. Another Z100 record, and I'm like, damn, Tip behind that? Yeah, y'all behind that? Yeah, yeah. But, I mean, it was moving. That Fancy record was...
Yeah,
that
Fancy was a big
that's
record.
Out of this world.
Yeah, that record was big.
Huge.
Yeah, a lot of records, too.
Exactly, exactly.
Like, look at Iggy got a lot of plaques, too, now. Like, for real. You know?
Travis Scott. This is an interesting conversation. I just learned some stuff. How did that come about?
You said you just learned some stuff.
Yeah, man.
Ships war. Yo, look, I'm telling you, I'm fresh out. I haven't been outside lately, man.
Let me go back to 2012.
Nah, shout out to DJ MLK, man. DJ MLK. Yeah, this is crazy, right? So, Tip met Iggy and Travis on the same night.
Really?
Same night, you know. And this was in L.A. I wasn't there. I was in Atlanta. Tip comes back to Atlanta, of course. He like, yo, Iggy, like, tall, white, blonde, foreign chick. Like, he like, yo, I'm going to write some rhymes. I already know what this is.
We got something.
So he like, you know, like, boom, he's like on it, you know. And I kind of, I'm in the room. His DJ MLK is like, yo, Jay, you got to see this other kid, though. He don't, whatever. So I'm like, all right, show him to me. And he shows me Trav's video. And to me, it was like, I got it. Like, yo, it's like Baby Ye, you know, like artistic, the whole nine, like sound wise, I'm like, I get it, you know? So literally like a day or two later, I went to LA and I met him. You know, actually right then I got on the phone with him, and then I went to LA like a day or two later and I met him. And then we came back to Atlanta, you know, and he came to Atlanta and, recorded some music, and literally we went to New York and did a deal with LA, you know? So, did a deal with Epic.
And at the time, you said you had like 500 YouTube followers, something like that?
Yeah, it was early. It was early. It was early.
So you, all right, so you signed a record deal with him, mm-hmm. You said with LA?
Partnership. Deal through Grand Hustle. Records. Yeah.
So he was on Grand Hustle.
Yeah, correct.
But how come nobody ever knew he was on Grand Hustle?
Yo, because Grand Hustle was smart.
You double said.
Let's start there. I mean, like, so think about this, right? So Travis, boom, does the deal. Then he meets Kanye. Clearly, Kanye sees what we saw, right?
Kidnapped him.
Yo, boom. They start working. And at that point, like, yo, we're here to support you as much or as little as you want us to. If it's working, why not? You know what I'm saying? Like, if it's working, like, why interrupt anything, you know? But for real talk, the best thing that happened in that scenario for him when it comes to us is we took him to L.A. Reid. You know what I'm saying? Like, and this is where L.A. gets all credit in the world. L.A., Jimmy Iovine, to meet him like the best executives of my era, you know? Mm. Because L.A., you know, he will invest in you and make you a star if he believes you're a star when you're in a room before everybody else sees you a star. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So like you could have went to Def Jam or any other label and they ain't gonna invest in you like that. You know, so that's the dope part about that story for real is like, yo, LA will invest in you.
Y'all always kept a good relationship even after y'all left LA?
LA?
Yeah.
Yo, LA's the best, man. Like LA, from the standpoint of when we left, you know, it wasn't like no grudges.
Okay.
You know what I'm saying? Like, more than anything, it was like, oh, shit. Damn. Salute. Y'all was right. I didn't see it. Let's do business.
That's dope. No, that's dope.
I was like, yeah.
So, you know? So Travis Scott is signed to Grand Hustle and then right away just decides to do his own thing. But he's already signed, so it's like he's still on the team. It's like if you don't show up to practice, you're still on the team. Is yeah, that, that's I mean, like kind of like the
listen to the first album. You see Tip all on the first album, like moderating the first album. There,
I don't think I heard. I don't think I heard like the first album.
I think people started catching wind after the rodeo, album.
Rodeo.
It started that traction started growing.
Sure,
and he became.
That's when you older people start catching.
Yeah. I didn't want to say that part, but that's when I was like, "Yo, who is this kid?"
Yeah.
Obviously, we knew Kanye, and I'm like, "Yo, this kid." Like is around Kanye a lot, and then I'm starting to listen to Ye's music. I'm like, wait,
yeah.
Yeah. It's starting to sound like this kid a lot.
Yeah.
And then the trajectory is just obviously out of this world. And then
So that last album was the Grand Hustle album.
Yeah, absolutely.
Astro World.
Yeah.
It was classic album. Classic album.
Modern classic.
Classic album.
Yeah.
You guys still have a relationship with him now? Or?
Man, I ain't speak to Travis probably in like about a year for real.
Okay.
You
know? Yeah. So you know how that go.
So he was able to create his own imprint before or like right after he left the Astro World tour? Then Cactus Jack Records comes about.
Cactus Jack's comes about right at in the beginning of Astro World.
Okay.
Yeah, so Cactus Jack is a part of Astro World as well.
Yeah, he went back to New York to get his first artist.
Yeah.
Who's his artist? Exactly. Oh, Shaq West?
Shaq West. Harlem Zone.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, shout out to Shaq West. So let's talk about the clothing business.
Clothing business.
So yeah. $300 million in sales.
Yeah.
That's what that said?
I guess so. Okay. I guess so.
A king of oneself.
I guess so. So Akul's 12 years old, though.
Yeah.
I started in 08.
So how did that work as far as getting in the clothing business? I'm assuming it's a lot different than the music business. Like, is it the same? Is it like distribution deals? Like, how's that work?
It's kind of the same. It's okay. Kind of the same in a sense. I mean, of course, it's different. The way that the money, you know, busts down on the end, a lot more recoupables and things of that nature because it's hard goods, right? You know? But same thing, right? For us, we knew once we caught momentum, we knew there's certain areas to go. That fashion was one of them. You think like during this era, everybody was wearing white tees. If you was in the South, Cash Money had everybody wearing white tees, right? In the South, you know? So to me, it was a no-brainer. Here we go, we got a good looking dude, all of that. So put some clothes on him, dress people up, you know? So we started the brand at the time when people thought that artist brands was dead, actually. That was the funny part about it. Like, it was like, yo, that shit don't work no more. It's played out. Like, no more artist brands, Rockaware and Sean John, and you know what I'm saying?
It
like,
just phased out.
All those had just kind of died out for real, you know? And we went and we met with, like, a lot of people. Like, people that was in the business. Russell Simmons and David John and Seth, who was Mark Echo's partner, and Echo and Complex and all that stuff, you know? So we met with just a lot of people in the business and just told them, like, yo, this is what we're trying to do. Like, what's up? And it's kind of like music. Like, some people put offers on the table, and then you start, but as you go from meeting to meeting, you're kind of learning as you're in these meetings, right? Like, damn, he said this, but he said that, but you know what I'm saying? Like, so you're learning the game too, and we pretty much went a route to get more direct to, like, a distribution company manufacturer as opposed to signing, like, through another record label, so to say. You know what I'm saying? So, like, we went more direct and did a deal with a company called the RP55 Group and launched the Akul in 08. Yeah.
Dope. And that's still in existence today?
It's still in existence today. We started Akul in 08, and then in 09, I started another brand called Strivers Row.
Yeah. You know? I want to get into that. Because even Strivers Row is important because, first of all, the name. And why you chose it. I obviously did New York roots there, but I don't think people even understand why you chose Strivers Row as a name.
I mean, Strivers Row, you know, it's a block in Harlem, you know, that is notoriously historical for the roots, specifically during the Harlem Renaissance. Mm-hmm. You know, you had a lot of, like, the leaders of the Renaissance that lived on this block, you know, politicians, writers, Langston Hughes, like, all type of people lived on this block, you know. And prior to them being able to live here, they didn't want to, white people, the owners of these buildings, they didn't want to sell the buildings to black people. So they kind of sat vacant for a while, you know, and eventually they sold. And at that point, it was like well-to-do black people in a sense, right, that was able to afford to buy. And this block was just popping. It was like very influential. So when you hear the stories, you know, about Strivers Row, if you read the stories and the history, it's kind of like a different version of Black Wall Street, you know what I'm saying,
right,
from a creative standpoint, more so than a financial standpoint, you know. So when I heard the story, when I heard the name, I thought it was dope. I always did. Shout out to Dennis Murphy, my man D. He definitely, we kind of talked about the name, and I was like, yo, I'm about to name my company that, you know, and that's how I named it, Strivers Row.
Let me ask you a question about licensing, because of cool. You had to license something for Muhammad Ali and Marvel.
Yeah.
What was the deal with that? How'd that work out?
That went good. Muhammad Ali went really well.
What was it? Like his likeness?
I mean, really, like, yeah, his likeness. Okay. So everything. So literally, you know, we did a whole capsule name. Mm-hmm. You know, we took DNA, butterflies, you know what I'm saying? Like, and brought it butterflies on sweatsuits, you know what I mean? Like, but of course, we had T-shirts with, boom, his face on them as well. So we did a combination. You know, same thing with Marvel. We've done something like that as well with the UN brand. Nah, not really. UN brand was a collab. That wasn't a license. So our two licenses have been those two so far. We're actually working on something right now that could be really dope.
So how does that work for, like, because we spoke about licensing before, but not from that standpoint of, like, you actually are the one that's paying the license.
Right.
Yeah. Like, for entrepreneurs that may be listening, they might not be aware of how that works. Sure. Like, can you explain, like, is it like a set amount that you have to pay them every time, like royalties?
Sure,
or like
absolutely. So if I'm the brand and you have a brand that I want to license, you know, now typically, oh, how about this? I'll flip it. If you guys want to license my brand, all right. And now I have a brand. Now, typically, for me to give you a license, the standard is like an 8 to 12% royalty, you know. Mm-hmm. Now, on top of that, I may have an advance that I want against my earnings, though, right? So now I may say, hey, like, I need $50,000, and then on top of that, I need 8 to 12%, whatever that number is. Like, we can agree on 12, 8, whatever, you know? Not to say that somebody else might not say, not to say that someone else may not do a deal for 20%,
yeah.
But 8 to 12%
standard.
Is standard. Yeah,
yeah, okay.
Exactly. You know? So that's how that pretty much works.
Okay.
So you go to Muhammad Ali, go to the estate, who owns the rights, cut a deal with them, get them their royalty, get them their advance, get the work, and I try to make it make sense.
Is it on total merchandise sold, or is it each piece of merchandise sold, the royalty?
Yeah, it's literally per whatever you're doing. Anything that has the likeness on it,
yeah,
counts.
Okay.
Yeah.
So like records, like an album, so very similar, right? Every album sold, they get royalties, okay.
If you're using this property, you know what I'm saying?
Gotcha.
Like, it's the same thing, right? If you're using my trademark, boom.
So what was the difference? Because Muhammad Ali, obviously, that's a family versus Marvel, which is a billion-dollar entity.
Sure.
I guess it was a lot harder with the Marvel, more like paperwork and lawyers and stuff like that? Or?
You know what? Not really, for real. That's the funny part is you would think it is, but like with Marvel, they give out so many licenses.
So I'm thinking,
you know
yeah.
So
they do it
like,
so much.
They do it so much. They like exploiting it so much, for real. That, you know, that's something that we learned, honestly. It was like, it was good to do it, but it wasn't as profitable because while you got your product in stores,
17 other people got it.
They got it in Walmart and Target. What
Marvel character did you do?
Man, we did. I couldn't speak on them. But I had to look at the phone. Okay. And you know what I'm saying? But like we did a lot of them, man.
Yeah. They probably were just sitting on the other side, like, oh, that's a character. Press the button.
You know what? I wonder if Ghostface had to ever pay Marvel.
They should pay him.
They should pay him.
They should pay him.
But I wonder if he ever had to pay him.
Interesting.
He had a whole album called Iron Man. Yeah. Tony Stark was his moniker for years.
But that's interesting, though. Who should pay who, though, right?
They should pay.
You
at that,
pay him.
At that time, and I was into comics. Like, I had the Marvel cards, the series, like, 91, 92, when you used to collect with the hologram cards.
Yeah.
I collected them. And then they started getting cartoons. But, like, when Ghostface started saying that, and it was, like, yo, cartoon characters, even, like, everyone in Wu-Tang had, like, an alter ego character.
Sure,
I was yo, they made it popular. They didn't have a Marvel movie then. Like, the first, Marvel didn't even put out movies till later. Like, the first thing Sony did was partner with them and put out Spider-Man, and then like, okay, now cartoon movies can be a thing.
Yeah.
But prior to that, nobody was thinking about it. I mean, DC had it with Batman and Superman, but Marvel was real quiet over that side.
Yeah. I was never a collector, so I can't speak too much, but that's interesting.
Yeah. No, that's interesting, because it's like, I can see it from both sides.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, you took their thing,
you made your whole thing on my thing.
Exactly.
So you think about it, like, if you was the person who made the originator, and the person that took your joint and ran with it and made a life of his own, come say, yo, you should pay me. You like, you need to pay me, though.
It was dead in the water.
It was me before that was you.
That's a fact. But he did help the brand.
I'm sure.
Free promotion.
Free
promotion.
But we see how many times have we seen that in hip hop culture?
Clearly, yeah. We definitely know that.
Yeah.
You know?
That's interesting.
Yeah.
So, okay. So, all right. So now, doubling back on the music thing.
Yeah.
Meek Mill. one of the greatest rappers of this generation. He was also signed to you guys.
Yeah. Meek, yeah. Tip, Charlie Mack. Shout out to Charlie Mack.
Philly's own.
That's kind of like how Meek connected with Tip. And literally, Meek was dope. Like, you saw the raw energy of it. You saw the, you know, that was Meek with the cornrows. You know what I'm saying? Like, see all of the clips you see now looking back, like, that was it.
So, like, when you first heard Meek, you knew, like, all right, this is something.
Honestly, when you first heard Meek, you knew he was dope. But even more than that, when we first heard Meek, Philly was already rocking with me.
Yeah, he was a celebrity in Philly.
Yeah, you know what I'm saying? Like, he was already a local thing, you know? Yeah. So it was like, I got my opinion. Of course, I think he's dope, but really, for real, who cares what your opinion thinks? His backyard loves him right now.
Yeah.
It's only a matter of time before it works, you know? And to me, that's what I feel like with artists, man. You want to get in business with an artist. I look at an artist as like a founder of a company, and you want to invest in someone that's going to make it with or without you.
Mm.
Period. You know what I'm saying? Like, if it's somebody that, yo, you need me for this, need me for that, it's a hard investment. But if it's somebody that, like, trajectory-wise, like, you see the energy, you see, like, yo, it's only a matter of time before he makes it.
So you guys just let him go free and clear when T.I. Went to jail?
Yeah.
No,
yeah.
Just nothing. Just out of good faith, like, yo, we just let him go.
It was done for you. You did it. You returned the favor.
Yeah. We had a producer, too, B Billionaire. Shout out to Raz. B Billionaire, he went over there with Ross, too, during that time. You know, we had him as well.
Do you have any regrets about that? Like, do you think maybe you could have still kind of worked out something with you? You know what I'm saying? Like,
I mean, you know, it's you can't really, I don't really see it like that.
It is what it is.
You know what I'm saying? You can't really, like, I don't really see it like that.
I mean.
That, you know, when you make certain moves and you a certain kind of way, you can always be straight.
You got, I mean, looking back on it, I mean, you lost Meek, but you had the next biggest star, probably the biggest star outside of the guy from Canada.
Well, speaking of that, we'll get there in a second.
Yeah,
I mean, it's interesting too, because I feel like in the music business, we spoke about this with Chris Gotti, where it's like, it's really just based off of your opinion, right? There's really no set rhyme or reason. Like, this person is going to be a star. This person isn't going to be a star.
Sure.
It's just kind of like you said, I mean, you can kind of gauge it off of like their buzz already. Yeah. But outside of that, as far as like gauging the quality of music or like star status, it's really just your personal opinion.
Sure.
And sometimes it works out. Sometimes it doesn't.
Absolutely.
So, Drake.
Drake.
When you was introduced to Drake and you could have signed Drake, what's the rationale?
Yo,
why you didn't sign Drake? Shout out to Drake.
Shout out to Drake. First and foremost, let's say this. We was going to Toronto a lot. We was doing stuff in Toronto, and yo, before Drake, Canada was a different world.
That's a fact.
We was there.
That's a fact.
It was a different world. Right? It was a lot of love, yo.
Yo, it was crazy.
Like, what? Like,
so, Jay.
Girls used to, like,
you know.
Dudes will bring you ladies. Like, hey, man, welcome to my city.
Yo, that is
these
a
girls.
Fact.
What? It was a different thing, man. Like,
yo, it was hitting
chill.
Shout out to Young Street.
We love in Toronto. We up there, you know. And it was a few rappers that was buzzing for real during that time. It was like Belly was buzzing and Drake was, you know, doing this thing. And it was a few rappers, you know. But of course, yes, Drake was introduced. I didn't see it, you know. I didn't see it at all. Like, we didn't see it, like, you know, for real. But at the same time, Drake had this manager, man. Hollaback T Slack. That was the name. I don't know where he at. Shout out to Hollaback T Slack. I always wondered what happened to him. For real. Because Drake, he had this manager and dude used to like go hard, but kind of be a little bit annoying too. For real.
Yeah.
I'm like, yo, what's up? This is Hollaback T Slack. Like, you know what I'm saying? like, and that's why, you know, like, yo, it's a fine line between like persistence and being a pain in the ass.
Yeah, that's a fact.
You know what I mean? And homeboy used to teeter that line for real. You know, so that you know, and it's all love. Like, shout out to him. Like, but it's just real.
Yeah.
Like, so for me, in my experience, that was another factor in it, too. Like, oh, shit.
You about to call me again.
But, you know, shout out to Drake. Like, yo, he went, and obviously, I'm sure he everything went perfect for him. You know what I'm saying? But, you know, when you went in it, everybody got a story about who they missed out on.
Yeah.
When you in it and you focused on your hustle, I'm going to miss out on somebody else's hustle.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? So you can't never think about it.
And like you said, at that time, it's like he has an afro and he's Jewish and he's doing Degrassi and yeah, he's singing.
Singing.
Yeah. I told you, like, even I read Jay Prince's book, and Jay Prince was like, he didn't understand it. Like, when his son was like, yo, he going to be big, he was like, whatever. But, like, you know what I'm saying? Like, he didn't.
I guess, Junior. He was
like, and that's all credit to Drake, right? Drake changed, like, hip-hop in that regard. Like, because for real, looking at it, there was nobody from Canada that was popping.
Nope.
There was Cardinal Official. Cardinal Official.
Yeah, Cardinal Official.
Cardinal Official.
Toronto legend.
Shout out to him, Toronto legend. But that was, like, the biggest rapper that we had seen up to that point. You know, so it was just like, yo, Drake had like a butterfly collar. It was just like, you didn't see it. Like, I don't know. Like,
no mustache.
Yeah, like he was young, but shit, he bounced back, came back through.
Nah, the country of Canada needs to make him like an official ambassador. Like, nah, because it's like, not only did he change the course of music, the Raptors all of a sudden became NBA. Like, bro, the whole culture changed.
Drake is everything for Canada. You kidding me?
Yeah.
Like, after him, look at the plane that they give him. Like,
yo, that's the hardest plane out.
Look at the plane, man. Yeah.
What I tell you, right? The message at the bottom is, if you're reading this, we love. That's hard. That is a hard message.
Yo, Drake is like the president of Canada, bro.
After him,
he is straight.
He became the biggest music star, and then he got replaced for a second by another guy from Canada, Justin Bieber. And it's like, yo, when did Canada? No,
Drake never got replaced.
No, pop star. Pop star. He's the biggest. Justin Bieber at a point was the biggest pop star.
Yeah.
But
I wouldn't use the term replaced.
No.
As a pop star?
He got joined.
Okay. Language is important. That's fair. Language is important. He got joined by another Toronto star. Then they started getting number one picks coming from Toronto. I'm just like, yo, what?
And then The Weeknd, pop, crazy.
Yeah, like
Belly.
Drake,
Tory Lanez.
He changed Toronto, bro.
Fact.
Like, that shit used to be like.
I never seen. We was in Toronto before Drake got popular. Like you said, you could go to the club for $5. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, it was crazy. I came back and it was like New York. They like,
Montana,
150 for the like, yo, it's crazy.
Toronto, yo. It's crazy to think about. Like, yo, you've experienced it, you know, like, yeah, man.
That was the Vince Carter days.
Shout out to Vince, man. So let's talk about another licensing deal on the music side, because you guys leave Atlantic and then you go to Columbia.
Yeah.
So for the Paperwork album.
Yeah.
So was that different? Like, it was a different type of deal. You just signed a licensing. Like, how did that work?
That was a distribution deal.
Distribution deal.
You know, so that was a distribution deal. Whereas, boom, like you said, it could work in two different ways. You can turn in an album and they can just distribute the album through a license, or they can just distribute the album directly with you, and you're good for whatever you agree on. Right, one album, two albums, whatever. But that's back to, you know, one of those splits that's just straight ownership at the end of the day.
So you did the first one wasn't a distribution deal
with Atlantic Records.
It wasn't.
No, that was a JV partnership.
But this one was a distribution
deal. This one was a distribution.
So what's the difference between a JV partnership and a distribution?
The difference between a JV partnership is really going to be the splits. Like, a JV partnership is typically 50-50. You know, like I said, can get your masters back or you cannot get your masters back, depending on your deal.
Mm-hmm.
You know? Now, when it comes to a distribution deal, you maintain the ownership of your masters, but now your split may change. You can come in and people say, yo, Master P, 85-15 split. Most people really ain't doing that for real, right? Most people, you might start off, okay, distribution, 85-15 or 80-20, so to say, right? And now the artist says, but I need some money for videos, I need some money for it. Everything you need money for is like, okay, 10 more for me, 10 more for me, 10 more for me. So you can end up being at a 60-40 and it can still be distribution. You're going to be at a 50-50 and it's still distribution. So it's like, depending on that split will determine the profit share, you know, but you're still owning your masters.
So the distribution, you own your masters right away. Right. That album, y'all owned the masters right away.
Yeah, exactly.
After that, do y'all become completely independent?
After that, Tip actually put out a project through Epic too.
Okay.
You know, but it was the same kind of way.
That's when LA went there to Epic. Yeah, okay, yeah, okay.
Yeah. LA was actually not that long ago, actually.
Yeah.
And then the All Def distribution.
Absolutely.
Acquisition. So what's that? What's All Def? So that was Russell Simmons' thing?
All Def, yeah. So Russell Simmons started All Def, which is basically a content company, right? That lives on multiple platforms, predominantly Facebook and YouTube. They focus on hip hop and comedy. So Russell Simmons started his company in like 2016, I think, maybe 15. And they raised like $17 million, you know, so they created brands. You got Bar Exam, you have Arts and Raps, you have, you know, different brands that exist on these on the platform. So now Russell Simmons and these guys ran into some complications, decided to sell it. Boom, we ended up buying it. When I say we, I created a
syndicate.
Syndicate, exactly. Me and Tip created a syndicate. So now myself, Tip, Baron Davis,
Paul Judge
is a part of it as well. Paul Judge, Mucker Capital, BetaWorks, you know, two VCs, mm-hmm. and my guys Cedric Rogers and Sean Newsom all pretty much acquired it. You know, but for real, like, yeah. So that's that, right? So we acquired that in the 19, opened up 2020 with it, and now of course the pandemic hits. Now, like you guys know, content has been up throughout the pandemic initially. So our content was up, our numbers was up. We reactivated the platform, you know, the programs, and things have been going good. Now ad dollars are leveling back up. So now we're actually about to go out and raise money, though, you know, because we want to do obviously more work with it.
So how do creators, how do they get the ability to put content on the platform?
On All Def?
Yeah.
Man, you can go to All Def and I'll say DM right now. That's the biggest way. We're working on the web app so that the whole page is not up. But mm-hmm. go and DM if you're a creator, if you're a comedian, or you're just a content creator in general, go to All Def and shoot a DM over.
So Heavy Sounds Lab. That's what you're doing now. What is that?
So Heavy Sound Labs is a modern day record label, you know? So now for me, I say I did Grand Hustle. I started that almost 20 years ago. So now what is a record company, so to say, look like today? So in my mind, I feel like it's community, because I know that I don't want to just have a brand new artist. Me and this brand new artist is just us. That's tough.
That's a tough job.
It's a long road ahead of me. You know? So to me, up front, I'm like, okay, it's really kind of community for real. You know, when I look at Grand Hustle and I look at what we built the community. You look at all of these brands, they really, Rockefeller,
Rough Riders,
like, yo, it was always community, right? But we really didn't have, like, we didn't take advantage of the technology, so to say, to connect the community, for real. Mm-hmm. You know, when I go to the Trap Music Museum, I see people that I've seen these people for years. You know what I'm saying? Like, now they standing here with their kids in line for the trap. So I'm like, damn, like, so now with Heavy Sound Labs, I'm saying from the beginning, I want to create an online record label. Now anyone can go to the website, heavysound.com. You can hit the artist tab and you can apply to be an artist. You know, nowadays we know that artists, it ain't about, yo, I'm in the streets, it's hot. Like this shit comes, yo, you went out the side of the wall, your mother, your parents, making a record, you know what I'm saying? You're doing a little dance move or something, you uploading it, boom, and now it's going. So to me, I want every artist, every young creator to know that they can come to heavysound.com and upload their music here, and we can possibly partner, you know? We've run through a series of questions designed to flow as if we were having a conversation. I ask artists what's important to them, da da da. Now, if they're with it, if we're with it, them as an artist, you know. As an artist, we work with artists in three phases, you know. Distribution, amplification, and growth, you know. So distribution is an 80-20 deal. Mm-hmm. So we come in, 80-20 partners, 80 goes to the artist for 20%. We provide services for them, distribution services, payout services, but we also give them attention. We give them office hours, you know, access to our team to really kind of learn stuff hands-on. We give them access to talks like this. We do talks with proven industry experts, you know, called Heavy Talks. So we give them access to those one-on-one conversations. We give them access to a lot of different resources. We have a Slack channel, you know, a Slack group that has about 800 of our crew members, you know, that are in here now having conversations.
Is that the Heavy Crew?
That's the Heavy Crew. Okay. Yeah. So you go to the website, heavysound.com. You can also hit the Heavy Crew now, you know, because initially what I started seeing is I pretty much had like an open casting call for artists. I'm turning away a lot of artists, right? A lot of artists are just not ready for it, you know? So now I'm like, damn, how could I convert them? I was an intern before I was on the street team before. So now I would say, like, what does today's street team program, internship program look like? If I'm saying I'm doing a digital record company, so now I create the heavy crew. So now if you're an artist that you're too early, yo, go apply over here, and we're going to have conversations to give you information so you can get your shit together. You know what I'm saying? But now, even more than that, now it's managers, A&Rs, promoters, you know, like other people that, yo, you have interest in the music business, you can come over here, we got this community, and we can all just share information and help build each other up. Yeah. You know? But at the same time, I get to activate my crew. So now I got almost 1,500 heavy crew members, and in my mind, I'm thinking back to street team, right? Like, there's no more hanging up posters, giving out stickers, flyers. That don't exist no more. Now it's post on social media.
Yeah, repost stories.
Repost, right? Comment, all of that stuff. So now I get to activate my crew and say, yo, on Tuesday at 2 o'clock, we're going to be advertising All-Star the Great. So we're going to post All-Star the Great. We're going to hashtag SRT at 2 o'clock on Tuesday, and now we got hundreds of people doing it at the same time, thousands of people eventually, right? For a brand new artist, the biggest thing for a brand new artist is to get somebody else to talk about them, yeah. You know, so you know, just kind of building that crew so it can be like more, and I can talk to the audience in a bunch of ways, not just about the direct music.
That's crazy, because in my mind, I'm like, especially in these times, how are you going to amplify the artist? But just gave a thousand ways, and one of the things I think is important is that there is no growth anymore in artists.
Yeah,
and it sounds like this is what this platform's for.
Yeah,
right. Like now it's like, yo, I can make a hot song in my living room, put it out, and now I'm hot. But how do I grow? Right. So like,
absolutely. How do I actually develop, turn this into a business?
Right.
Right. It's like everybody got access now. Well, how do you turn that into a sustainable business as the other side of it? You know. So for us, like I said, I look at it. I bring artists in. Originally on an 80-20 split, and now I look at your traction at the right time. We evolved to a 50-50 deal. I start investing finances in you, and my goal is to partner with a major label. You know, so I want to do the same thing that I've done with a T.I., with a Travis, with a Bob, with all of these artists, right? Grab them early as an early stage investment, partner with them, invest in them, show traction, partner with a major label. So it's a music incubator. I want to do that over and over and over again. You know?
Do they own their masters? Or?
Yes.
Okay.
They own their masters.
So it's like a direct, and then you just, so it's like a TuneCore, a CD Baby. Like
you. Nah, it's not like that, right? So you have TuneCores and CD Babies, but I'm like a luxury offering for real. You know what I'm saying? Like, you go there, that shit is like the abyss. It's just like a black hole.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Like, I'm
well,
the
I
guy.
Mean, for them, as far as like they publish it to the. To the iTunes.
Yeah, they own everything. Yeah, they own everything when they go that route. Now, when you come my route, you still own everything. We do a 24-month deal. So I want to partner with a major label within 24 months. You know, you own your masters, but I got the rights to exploit your masters, meaning that I'm going to be, during this time, working syncs and trying to get placement of your songs, socialize somewhere else. So I need the ability to run around and do that as opposed to, you know, you're a new artist. So you don't have no demand, so nobody's waiting for you. I don't have time to say, yo, John Brown, I'm calling you, and John Brown's at work, like, you know what I'm saying? And John Brown can't get back to me, like, and by the time he get back to me, after the night shift's over with, he hits me back, and I hit the other person back the next day, they're like, are you serious? Like, I don't care about, you know, like, at that point, it's just a numbers game. Whoever has the sound for the low, that's where we're going to go right now. So I just really want the rights for the duration to exploit your music and help build your music. But you own your music. That time, because for real, the masters ain't worth nothing yet.
Like, yeah,
you know what I'm saying?
You
that's
keep
the
it.
Trick, man. Yeah, like, right, right. You always own it as long as it ain't worth nothing. Like that doesn't really matter. So people got to really understand, like when they start talking about masters and ownership and people investing money in you, like a lot of people really don't have a real good education on that still. You know?
That's a fact. So do you think that record labels are still? And because we've heard like Steve Stout say, like record labels aren't, they shouldn't even be around anymore. Like. You feel there's still a place for record labels, or how do you feel? Like, what's your thoughts about that?
Yo, I mean, to me, I feel like you just got to go on a record label the right way. You know, I feel like the biggest acts in the world are with major record labels.
That's a fact.
You know, a major record label provides resources, personnel all around the globe. Music right now is a global business, right? Hip hop. Biggest genre in the world, you know. So to me, Like, I want to know, like, yo, what's going on in Tokyo? What's going on in London? What's going on in Lagos? What's going on over here in Sydney? Like, you know what I'm saying? If they're consuming music in Britain, like, it benefits me to have representation, right? So now we talked about all kinds of different deals. If I tell you, yo, you could do a deal with these people, you can maintain ownership, and they're going to promote you, I don't get it. Like, so, you know, I think it's really just about what kind of deal you do, but most artists really want to be the biggest artist they could be. They want to be Kanye, right? You know what I'm saying? I'm biggest artist. I got sneakers. I got, I'm selling out shows. I got the hot girl. I got, like, you know what I'm saying? Like, most artists want to be Kanye. They don't want to be Master P for real. You know what I'm saying? Like, Master P put in work for real. So most people could say that and it sound good, but man, you don't have to, you know, that's a special person. It's very rare to find that those attributes both in one person, you know. Yeah. So it's interesting.
Jason, man, you didn't disappoint, man.
Oh, man.
I appreciate it. I appreciate it. How can the people contact you? And yeah, all of the adventures that you have going on. Anything that you want to tell the people?
Absolutely. I'm Jason Jeter, G-E-T-R on social media, be it whatever, you know, every social media, Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, Jason Jeter, G-E-T-R. And then you can also go to heavysound.com if you're an artist, if you want to be a part of the process of music, of developing artists, of building new brands, if you want to communicate and network with like-minded creatives, heavysound.com.
Appreciate that. Troy, housekeeping items?
Yeah, shout out to everybody on patreon.com. That is our Proud to Pay program. Y'all know that tier 4 and 5 gets you access to EYL University, the number one online school in the world, man. Shout out to all the earners on there. And shout out to everybody that's in our book club and our investment group on Facebook, headed up by myself and our brother MG, the mortgage guy, and everybody that's supporting the merch on earningleisure.com. We got some limited items that'll be coming out very shortly, so stay tuned for that.
How's the merch doing?
Merch is doing pretty well, man. So we
got some stuff for you.
We got some stuff for you.
Yeah, I got some stuff.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely.
Yeah, that's what's up.
Yeah. Yeah, you know what to a thing about that. So we gotta we gonna pick your brain.
Any pointers are greatly appreciated.
Yeah, for sure.
Once again, shout out to Atlanta. Thank you guys for rocking with us. We'll see you next week. Peace.
Peace.